From our entire team here at Bay Area Innovators, from producers to cameramen, and from video editors to designers, we thank you for joining us this Christmas Eve. We're grateful to spend part of this holiday with you, and we hope tonight's episode brings inspiration and warmth to your celebration. Wishing you and your loved ones a very Merry Christmas.
Nobody knew where Bin Laden was. We followed those helicopters. We're using drones. The helicopters got over the compound, and one of the helicopters started to stall and went down. It's that moment when your stomach is in your mouth. I remember calling Bill McCraven, Admiral McCraven, who was in Afghanistan, and he didn't miss a beat. He said, we're gonna go on with the mission. I've got another backup helicopter coming in. We're gonna breach through the walls. We're gonna go ahead. And I said, God bless you, God bless you. And he did. And he went in, we heard some gunfire. There was about 20 minutes of silence after those gunshots, longest 20 minutes of my life. And he came back and he said, yes, we have a Geronimo, which is the code word for finding Bin Laden.
Today we're joined by Leon Panetta, former CIA director, Secretary of Defense, and White House Chief of Staff. Few public servants have operated at the center of so many defining moments in modern US history, from overseeing the mission that killed Osama bin Laden to navigating global security threats at the highest levels of government. In this conversation, Panetta reflects on his family and growing up in Northern California, the bin Laden raid, intelligence and accountability, emerging risks like AI and social media, and the lessons learned from decades of public service. This is Bay Area Innovators, and I'm your host, Steve Ispas. Secretary Panetta, welcome to our program.
Good to be with you.
Well, it's an honor to have you here. We're on the beautiful campus of the California State University at Monterey at the Panetta Institute. You're really a very local person. You were born in Monterey, you grew up here. You went to Santa Clara University, which is a mile away from our office. So we have a lot in common here. Please tell us about your, you know, you grew up here and then your family is from Italy. Do you still feel close to the Italian culture?
I believe very firmly in one's roots, and my roots are in Italy. My parents were immigrants. They came to this country in the early 30s from Calabria. In Italy, both of them are Calabresi. My father was the 13th in his family, and he had several brothers who came over to America ahead of him. One brother wound up in Sheridan, Wyoming, and another brother wound up in California. So when my mother and father came here, the tradition is you visit your older brother first. Mm-hmm. So they visited my uncle Bruno in Sheridan, spent one winter in Sheridan, Wyoming, and my mother said, I think it's time to visit your other brother in California, which they did and made it here to Monterey, where I was born. And my mom and dad opened a restaurant in downtown Monterey during the war years. And my earliest recollections were standing on a chair in the back of that restaurant washing glasses. My parents believed child labor was a requirement in our family.
Yes.
But it was a very exciting time. Fort Ord, where we're at, this is really the former Fort Ord Reservation, was training young men for the battlefields of World War II. And their last stop was civilization. It was downtown Monterey. So you can imagine what Monterey was like in those days. And my parents, my father was had an Italian restaurant, Carmelo's Cafe, I can remember my parents inviting some of them to our home for the holidays. And I was a boy, and I was thinking, these are young men who are going to wind up going to war. And I never forgot that, particularly when I became Secretary of Defense. So it was an exciting time. My parents sold the restaurant after the war, bought a farm in Carmel Valley, farmland. My father planted a walnut orchard, and my brother and I worked out there, the same like as we worked at the restaurant. Work was important in our family. I grew up on the farm, then went to schools here in Monterey, Catholic schools, and then Monterey High School, and then went to Santa Clara University, where I took political science, and then went to law school at Santa Clara. I also got my commission in the Army at Santa Clara in ROTC. So when I graduated from law school, I had to serve 2 years of active duty in the Army. But people ask me, why did I go into public service? Number one, my parents, because my parents felt it was very important to give back to this country because of what this country gave them, an opportunity.
Yes.
Secondly, because of my experience in the Army and seeing people from all over the country come together to work on a common mission to take the hill. And thirdly, because of a young president who said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country.
Yes, JFK, of course, yes. Well, you know, many immigrants have this kind of mindset. I also came here as an immigrant from Romania, so I can relate to a lot of that. Now, I want to ask you next about what it's widely regarded as probably the most significant operation of the U.S. military and intelligence, for that matter, if not the most. And that's, of course, taken out Osama bin Laden in 2011. Now, you were in charge of the CIA at that time. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what went on at that time. Where were you? What did you see the SEALs, you know, going in? You know, give us a sense of what happened.
Yeah, it was obviously probably one of the most important operations that I've ever been a part of. As director of the CIA. When I first got appointed by President Obama to be CIA director, and I went to the Oval Office to meet with the president, he made very clear that it was important for me to go after bin Laden, because by that time, 9/11 had happened almost eight or nine years before. Nobody knew where bin Laden was. Some people thought he was dead. Some people thought he was in the mountains. They didn't know.
Some cave or something.
Yeah, or living in a cave. And so the president said, it's really important to go after bin Laden. And so I went back to the CIA, and I remember asking the people at the CIA, I said, who's in charge of going after bin Laden? And they all raised their hand, which is trouble. And so I knew I had to really create a task force to focus on going after bin Laden. So I appointed two senior people to head that task force. And I told them, I said, I want you to do nothing else but go after bin Laden and report to me every week as to what you're doing. And they did that, they did. And sometimes they'd come in and say, we just don't have anything new. And I remember saying to them, look, I don't want you to come in here and tell me there's nothing new. If you haven't found anything, give me five new ideas about how you're going to try to find bin Laden. And they did that. They did that. And they looked at a number of different ways to try to go after him. They looked at the family connections. They looked at technology and whether we could use technology to try to find him. And finally, we got good intelligence on what were called the couriers for bin Laden. These are people who carried his message to the public. Nobody really knew who they were, but we got intelligence identifying who they were. And we located them at a place called Peshawar in Pakistan. We were able to locate them. We followed them using drones. A lot of drones are used these days. We started using drones then. And we followed them from Peshawar to a place called Abbottabad. And they drove into a large compound that was about three times the size of other houses there. Had 18-foot walls on one side, 12-foot walls on another side, barbed wire at the top. And there was a strange family that was living on the third floor. And I remember going to the president and telling him that there's something we found that's interesting, because these are the couriers for bin Laden. There's a family living there. It could be, you know, that bin Laden is there. And the president said, I want you to do constant surveillance and to find out whether bin Laden really is there.
Because you had to be sure.
Yeah, we tried, we had to know. So we did 24/7 surveillance using drones, constantly looking at what was happening. And we didn't have any breaks except one couple days, an older gentleman came out and would walk in circles in the yard and then go back inside. And I remember saying to the CIA, for goodness sakes, that could be bin Laden. Give me a telescope, give me a camera.
Right.
I need to get a facial ID on who that is. And they said, it's very hard to do. We have 18-foot walls on one side, 12-foot walls on the other side. And I remember saying to them, I've seen movies where the CIA can do this. We laughed about it, but they never really were able to get a good view. But we continued to get intelligence, to put pieces together. And finally, the president said, I want you to develop an operation to go after that compound, because he was concerned that the information might leak. So I went to Admiral McCraven, Bill McCraven, who was head of Special Forces. I showed him, we had a model of the compound. I said, Bill, I want you to develop an operation to be able to go after this compound. And he did. He came up with different approaches. One was to take a B-1 bomber and just blow the hell out of the place.
Probably the easiest way.
Just wipe it out, which had an attraction. Yeah. But it would cause a lot of damage.
And then you never know.
To other villages, yeah. And we would never know.
Yeah.
And we were going to do a drone strike, but same problem. We would never know if it was bin Laden. And so he recommended taking two teams of SEALs, Special Forces, putting them on two helicopters, going 150 miles into Pakistan, and going and rappelling down and going after whoever was living at that compound. And we discussed it several times. I mean, it took a lot of practice. We went, the president decided that was the best way to go. We brought it to the National Security Council. And I have to tell you, there were a lot of people that were nervous about it. They were concerned. And some people didn't support it. Some people said we need more intelligence.
Was this a concern mainly about that
they were concerned about what happened in Iran when the helicopters went in to get the hostages. I can remember Bob Gates, who was Secretary of Defense, was in the White House when Iran happened. And he was worried about what happened to those helicopters and said that could happen again. The president asked me, and I said, Mr. President, I've had an old formula I used when I was in the Congress, when I faced a tough vote, which is to pretend I'm talking to an average citizen in my district and saying, if you knew what I knew, what would you do? And if I told the average citizen we had the best evidence on the location of bin Laden since Tora Bora, I think that citizen would say we have to go. And that's what I'm recommending to you. He didn't make a decision, but the next morning I got a call from the White House that he wanted to go ahead with the mission. We had the SEALs were located in Afghanistan. I gave them the order to go. Mm-hmm. We followed those helicopters. We're using drones. We followed them going into Pakistan for 150 miles. It was almost 2 hours that they were in the air. The helicopters got over the compound, and because it had been hot that day, the heat came up, and one of the helicopters started to stall and went down. There's a picture of the people at the White House that were watching this. And the shock.
Oh, that was
the moment.
Shock.
So one goes down, the other one. I remember calling Bill McCraven, Admiral McCraven, who was in Afghanistan, and I said, "What the hell's going on?" It's that moment when your stomach is in your mouth.
Yes.
I said, "What's happening?" And he didn't miss a beat. He said, "We're going to go on with the mission. I've got another backup helicopter coming in. We're going to breach through the walls. We're going to go ahead." And I said, God bless you, God bless you. And he did. And he went in. We heard some gunfire. I knew that something had happened because you could hear gunfire.
So you could also see?
I could see. We had drones over the compound. So we were actually providing those pictures to the White House in the National Security Room. There was about 20 minutes of silence after those gunshots. Longest 20 minutes of my life. And then McRaven came back because I was in touch with him, and he said, I think we have a Geronimo, which is the code word for finding bin Laden. And a few more seconds went by, and he came back and he said, yes, we have a Geronimo, which meant that got bin Laden.
Yes.
We got bin Laden. Now, it's still not over. They're on the ground.
Yes.
They've got to get him. They've got to get intelligence, get back on the helicopters, fly back another 2 hours back to Afghanistan. And we were still worried that the Pakistanis would find out and they would go after them. But they were able to get back. And when they got there, I can remember, you know, that we told the president that that the mission had been successful. Mm-hmm. And I went to the White House, and I remember the president speaking to the American people and describing what happened. Mm-hmm. And soon after his address, there were crowds that were gathering in Lafayette Square and in the front side of the White House.
Yes.
And on the back side of the White House. And they were yelling, USA, USA, CIA, CIA. Never thought I would hear that.
Yes.
It was a great feeling to know we had accomplished that mission, because we sent a message to the world that nobody attacks our country and gets away with it. So it was a great mission to be part of. Great job by our intelligence people. Great job by our special forces.
Yes.
And a great job by all of the support staff that helped make it happen. So it was a great mission to be a part of.
Well, I think it was psychological in so many ways, right? Because it wasn't just taking him out. It crippled the organization in so many ways. And because he was this charismatic kind of figure that was not being replaced in any way. So.
Yeah. You know, and I remember, you know, soon after I knew we had gotten bin Laden. My thoughts were of the families in New York City whose husbands and fathers and wives and brothers had been killed. Almost 2,000 people got killed. And I remember thinking of the families and the fact that we had brought justice, not just to bin Laden, but in many ways, we brought justice to them. That they deserved to hear that the person who killed their loved one, we had gotten.
And I did see a brick in the hallway here from the compound.
Yes.
The
SEALs, because they had to breach through the walls, they were going to rappel down. But because the helicopter went down, they had to get out, breach through the walls. And they blew up the walls, went in. And they somehow picked up a brick, put it in their backpack, and then when they got back, presented it to me, and I now have a brick from bin Laden's compound that reminds me of the mission.
Well, I'm going to move on to the Department of Defense soon, but I want to ask you more about the CIA. So there were criticism that when you would become director that you didn't have enough experience, you know, with intelligence. But that others were said that it works to your benefit because you're not tied into the bureaucracy of the CIA.
Yeah.
And you were welcomed with a rock star welcome by the staff there. So with that said, can you tell us a bit about the programs? You know, you had the Panetta review, you know, at the time with the interrogation techniques. But we see all these movies where there's all these programs that the CIA is doing that are not known. How soon are you able to, were you able to get access? And how do you even know if you got access to all of them?
Well, that, when the president nominated me to become director, and we talked about it, and I said, you know, Mr. President, I said, I was an intelligence officer when I was in the military, but, you know, in the Congress, I worked on the budget. I was chairman of the budget committee. We helped balance the budget. I've worked on ocean protection. I helped establish the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. I said, but so I'm not sure, you know, why you're asking me. And the president said, you know, Leon, I need you to restore the credibility of the CIA, because both parties had been very critical of whatever the CIA was doing. And so I understood that, having come from the Congress, of the importance of doing that. And so what I did was I asked my chief of staff, Jeremy Bash, who had worked on the intelligence committees in the House and knew the CIA, I said, set up a bunch of briefings for me. And he did. And there's a number of parts to the CIA. One is operations, one is analysis, one is support for the mission, another is providing all of the disguises and the other work you have to do in order to be able to gather intelligence.
Of course.
So I learned about all of the different programs. But I have to tell you one thing. When I went to the CIA and met with my predecessor, Mike Hayden had been the former CIA director. He said, Leon, you probably don't know this, but you're going to be a combat commander. And I said, what are you talking about? And he says, we have operations where we are using drones to go after Al-Qaeda leadership that was involved in 9/11. They were in Pakistan in the tribal areas hiding. And so there were actual operations going on to try to target those involved and go after them. And I learned very quickly that I was going to be making life and death decisions as director of the CIA. And look, the most important thing about the CIA is that they really aren't Democrats or Republicans. They're good Americans who really want to protect this country. And I found that out. And I really work with them. I defended them. And I established a very good relationship with the members of the CIA, because I respected them and respected what they were doing. And I can't tell you how important intelligence is to protecting our national security.
Let me move on to the Department of Defense. You were Secretary of the Defense, and you were nominated, and then you were confirmed with a vote 100-0, which is pretty unusual. And I remember some of your warnings at the time were about the military budget and the dangers of China, Iran, and North Korea. And we can see now how much wisdom was in there. Our network has been covering China and the danger that China presents to the world. Tell us more about your thoughts at the time when you were concerned about the Chinese Communist Party and China and the need for maintaining enough resources for that.
Well, it was, I can remember, you know, after doing the bin Laden mission, I spent a lot of time in Washington. And I always had a good sense of timing when to get the hell out. You know, I was chief of staff to Bill Clinton. I left after the first 4 years, which was the right time to go. The same thing was true with some other positions I had. I always had a good sense of timing. And I thought to myself, you know, I've just completed this very important mission. This is probably a good time to go back home to California, to Monterey, California. And the president then asked me, you know, I really want you to become Secretary of Defense. And I said, you know, I'm thinking about going back home. And he said, no, he says, I really need you to do that. And it was an honor, of course, and the president asked. I've always said yes. So I became Secretary of Defense. I realized, you know, as Secretary of Defense, I'm now in charge of 3 million people, 2 million in uniform, 1 million civilians, the biggest office building in the world,
That's
practically,
right.
with the Pentagon.
Yes.
And I remember sitting down, and now I'm really sitting down with the military, both the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, plus all of the heads of the different branches of the military. And we were talking about the threats at that time. We were involved in two wars. We were involved in the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. But more importantly, as Secretary of Defense, I had to worry about other threats in the world.
Yes.
And so I was worried about Russia. Russia had been an adversary for a long time. And we knew that Russia's intentions were to try to undermine our security. China was now a very significant threat. They had improved economically, and they were now investing money in their military and really trying to spread their influence around the world. We were very concerned about China's ability to threaten our presence in the Pacific in particular. We were nervous about North Korea. North Korea had developed nuclear weapons and also missiles to deliver those nuclear weapons. So they represented a real threat, not just to the Pacific, but to the United States. And we were worried about Iran as well. Iran was promoting instability in the Middle East and also really trying to undermine democracies everywhere. So, and then not to forget terrorists. We still were dealing with terrorists. Even though we'd gone after bin Laden successfully, the fact was there were other terrorist groups like ISIS and others that were still threatening attacks on our homeland. So bottom line is we were facing a number of threats. And my responsibility as Secretary of Defense was to make sure that we had a sufficient force to be able to deal with these threats. And, you know, if we had to fight a war, for example, in China, what would happen if a war broke out in the Middle East? I remember sitting down and developing a defense strategy with the military that kind of tried to develop a defense force for the 21st century. In one in which we could quickly deploy to areas where we had to respond.
Yes.
One where we would have capability in our forces to develop new technologies, a lot of new technology being developed, AI among them, but also cyber, et cetera. So developing the right technologies, developing the ability to be able to rebalance some of our forces to China, to make sure that we were sent a clear message to China that we were going to remain a strong force in the Pacific. And at the same time, be able to fight two wars against terrorism in Afghanistan and Iraq. So there were a lot of responsibilities at the time, but I also have to tell you again, the United States military is the strongest military on the face of the earth, and I was very proud of the men and women who were our soldiers.
Yes.
They're good, dedicated Americans who really know how to fight for our country. When I would visit with them, I'd look in their eyes and I said to myself, these are young people. They're the age of my sons. And here they are, they're ready to fight and die for this country. And I never forgot that, you know, that they were willing to fight and die for this country. And I was just always very proud of the men and women who served in our military.
Now, you were also well known for being very respectful of pretty much both sides of the government. I want to ask you about the letter that was signed by yourself and 50 other intelligence officials about the Hunter Biden laptop.
Yeah.
Do you think there was enough intelligence gathered to determine that there was Russian misinformation?
You know, my principal concern, frankly, was Russian efforts to undermine our country. Mm-hmm. The Russians had tried to interfere with our election in 2016. They tried to interfere with our election in 2018, 2020, and they continue to do that. Russia's goal is to undermine the United States of America. And so they were using cyber, they were using all kinds of efforts to try to undermine our capabilities. And so I thought it was important to make the American people aware of the fact that Russia is an enemy and trying to undermine our country. I wasn't particularly focused on one aspect or another. I just wanted the American people to understand what a threat they were.
I'm gonna signal. I have one more question, which I think is very important. The Council for Responsible Social Media. This is what you've been part of since 2022. Now, there's this epidemic of social media taking over our kids. You know, my son is 14. He's, you know, we try to guide him as much as we can, but it's a difficult time for kids because they're surrounded and it's so tempting, it's so addicting. Please tell us about it. You know, you're putting effort into addressing this. It's such an important issue for so many parents.
I think we're living at a time where the truth is under attack. And critical to the ability of a democracy to function is to have two political parties willing to work together on the problems, to accept the truth of those problems, and then to try to solve them. That's critical to the ability of our democracy to survive. But with social media being so prevalent right now, and the problem is that on social media, you're not quite sure that you're going to really hear the truth. It distorts the news, it distorts the facts, it appeals to factions in our society and reinforces the divisions in the American people.
Yes.
And the toughest thing to do when social media is spreading disinformation is how do you now bring the truth to the American people? That's a real challenge right now. And I think it's impacting on the ability of our democracy to be able to function. I think we have to get back to the truth. I think we have to find ways to make sure that the American people are getting the facts. But that is probably one of the greatest challenges we face in the 21st century.
And not to mention there's reports that there's more bots, more AI created content on the internet than real content.
AI now is, you know, everybody thinks it's kind of where the future is because it's, you know, this remarkable artificial intelligence and its capability. But it is going to present a lot more challenges because the important thing we have to recognize about AI, like we recognized about the computer and about the cell phone, is that humans have to be in charge. We cannot forget that. Because if we allow AI to operate on its own, it could really be a threat to our country and for that matter to the world.
Yes. Secretary Panetta, I would love to ask you more questions, but I'm getting signs that you have to go. The AI is a great place to leave it because there's so much to it. There's things like super intelligence that, like you said, can create this AI doing its own thing. And actually, the CIA probably plays a major role in that because to figure out what's going on and when.
Yeah.
We thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you for watching another episode of Bay Area Innovators. If you enjoyed this episode and you know someone who should be on our show, please send us an email at sfbay@epochtimes.com. We would love to hear from you. Thank you, and see you next week.